From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. President Donald Trump declared at a recent national prayer breakfast that he would totally destroy the Johnson Amendment in order to allow representatives of faith to speak freely and without fear of retribution. Until that declaration, many Americans probably hadn't thought much about the Johnson Amendment, what it means. So today, we're going to explore the potential implications with two local members of the clergy. But before we do that, a quick explanation. The Johnson Amendment, so named after Lyndon B. Johnson, is the 1954 legislation that prohibits nonprofits from supporting or opposing a candidate for political office. Johnson launched the effort to pass this law after some nonprofits campaigned against him while he was a senator, suggesting he was a communist. To be clear, the president doesn't have the power to repeal a law by himself. It would take an act of Congress. Whether there is a wider appetite for that is an open question. Joining us today to explore the consequences of a Johnson Amendment repeal from the perspective of religious institutions, one kind of nonprofit, and to talk about navigating politics within their own congregations are two local faith leaders. Rabbi Julie Koslow heads the B'nai Israel Synagogue in Wilmington. Rabbi Koslow, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Charlie Lee is associate pastor of First Presbyterian Church, also in Wilmington. Pastor Lee, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Do you think members of the clergy should be freer to discuss politics and politicians? Do you see it as a slippery slope, blurring the lines between church and state? Give us a call on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. If the Johnson Amendment goes away, Rabbi Koslow, do you see it as an attack on the separation of church and state, or is this an affirmation and an expansion of your right to free speech?
If the amendment goes away, I absolutely see it as a slippery slope and a challenge to the separation of church and state, which I think is so foundational for our country's greatness, quite honestly. If the Johnson Amendment went away, there's not one thing that I would change in my behavior as to how I rabbi and serve as a clergy for my congregation, because I feel that it is so vital and so important in the way that it does hold up the separation of church and state, that I would change absolutely nothing of my behavior as a clergy member. And no, I absolutely do not feel that it is any threat whatsoever to my rights to free speech as an American. I have other avenues for that.
Pastor Lee, do you have a position on whether you'd like to see this go away or stay in place?
I agree with what was just said, that it is something that is good to have the separation between church and state, and that doing away with that amendment and trying to have congregations be encouraged to endorse political candidates would be detrimental to our life as a faith community. As we seek to learn how to be disciples, it would enter in a different dynamic to that conversation that would be detrimental to our life together as a community, where we struggle and think of how we can be faithful disciples together.
So, Rabbi Koslow, if nothing would change where the Johnson Amendment is concerned, as far as your practice in your particular synagogue, then why does it matter to you? Why does repealing the Johnson Amendment mean to you the slipping away of that separation between church and state?
You know, I'm not sure there are words to express what I'm going to try and express here. There is a cogent difference between spiritual life and political life. And I am constantly walking on that tightrope. I don't have a need in any way for my congregation to believe everything that I believe. That's not what has called me to the rabbinate or to serve in this capacity. I have a drive to try and inspire people spiritually. So how do you inspire people spiritually? You teach them, you guide them, you model for them, you use ancient texts and wisdom that have been passed down generation to generation, in our case for thousands of years, which are still, they're still strong. And you try and inspire people spiritually. With that said, one of my rabbis said to me, and I often quote it, there are a million things upon which reasonable people will disagree. And I'm hesitant to understand a community where everybody is expected to believe the same thing that the religious leader believes. That feels a little more cult-like to me than what I understand is a thriving religious community where human beings come together. They're drawn together by a shared faith. And yet within that faith, there are countless, endless opinions where people can disagree. I think this is the slippery slope because we are living in a culture now in our country where this idea of respecting and making room for the other has completely dissipated into the political madness we are in. And people feel empowered to passionately hate somebody just because they disagree with them. And this to me is that's a slippery slope which will lead us into such darkness. And it goes counter to everything that this great country was based on, because if we are not open to allowing everybody's voice to be heard, then sooner or later, almost nobody's voice is going to be heard. And it's so to me, it has a lot of ramifications and implications if the Johnson Amendment were to be done away with detrimentally for us.
So this amendment specifically prohibits the endorsement or the open opposition of any political candidate. But Pastor Lee of First Presbyterian Church in Wilmington, what about issues? Members of the clergy are free, as I understand it, to take positions on social and political issues of concern. They can even publish, according to the IRS, issue guides. Do you take positions on issues in your church?
Well, I think our my call as a pastor is to come alongside a community of faith and to help them wrestle with those issues and to frame it in such a way. The question is where you begin. And so as we as a faith community begin with our view of God, our understanding of God, our faith tradition, and also how we faithfully try to interpret the scriptures, that's what I see, because everyone comes into the pews each Sunday or into a class wrestling with these things. They have these questions. They have these arguments with their neighbors, with their friends. They're trying to also understand how this works. And so as a leader of faith community and as a part of a faith community, I think that's probably what we're trying to do, is try to help people, help frame those issues and help them to look at them through the lens of their faith so that they can understand how they can faithfully live that faith out, both in their everyday lives as well as on divisive political issues.
Can either of you think of a time in your congregation or when you've been a member of a congregation when there has been a social issue that has come up within that congregation that has forced the church or the temple to deal with it? For instance, we hear stories of, certainly when there was a lot of national discussion around same-sex marriage and the Supreme Court hadn't yet issued a ruling. Not that that impacts religious organizations. They're still free to take whatever position they will, as I understand it. But a same-sex couple at some point is going to come to you and say, I want to get married here. And how do you deal with that, Pastor Lee?
I think not by shrinking away from it. There can be ways where you sometimes people feel it would just be safer just to not talk about it. And so we have struggled particularly with that issue in our congregation. In a larger congregation where you welcome a diversity of views, you have people that disagree. As you said, people who are good Christians, of good character, who simply just disagree on issues like that. And so what we've tried to do is put people in conversation with each other and to make those decisions faithfully together, seeking the guidance of the Holy Spirit. And sometimes those decisions, as you're saying, sometimes go to a, you know, to a vote of a governing body or something like that that can cause a lot of pain and a lot of hurt. But the idea is that we are stronger together if we can continue to talk about those issues. And my thing is I really do believe that it is important to have that diverse group of people together and in conversation with each other. If you have a community where you're not just talking about issues, but you then know someone personally who is affected by that issue in a certain way, vastly changes the conversation. So we have, we know we've been talking about immigration a lot, or they've been talking about it in the news a lot. We have a group in our church that has sponsored a refugee family here in Wilmington. And so having that issue, listening to the news and kind of talking about it big picture is much different than sitting beside a refugee family in church and seeing their small children and knowing their names and sharing a meal with them. And so the more we can do that and facilitate those conversations where we really do try to take it out of the abstract and bring it down to the personal level, I think makes a big, big difference.
Rabbi Coslow, has there been a time during your time at B'nai Israel that a modern political issue has arisen? And I and there's the music. We're going to go to break in a second, but think about this during the break. And you've said, I can't put this in the context of an ancient text. I need to bring this into today. And we will be back in about 90 seconds. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's an exploration of the Johnson Amendment, its implications for local houses of worship, and how members of the clergy choose to navigate the intersection of politics and religion. Pastor Charlie Lee of First Presbyterian Church is here, Rabbi Julie Coslow of B'nai Israel, both in Wilmington. We're taking your questions on this Wednesday, 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're learning today about how members of the clergy navigate the sometimes controversial intersection of politics and religion and what impact they see the Johnson Amendment having on the way they communicate with their congregations. With us on this Wednesday to answer your questions, Rabbi Julie Coslow of B'nai Israel Synagogue and Pastor Charlie Lee of First Presbyterian Church, both in Wilmington. If you have a question for our guests, you can reach us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or at coastline@whqr.org. And Rabbi Coslow, just before we went to break, I asked you if there's been a time when you felt this political issue or social issue that was arising in your culture was sort of in your face and you couldn't couch it in ancient textual terms, but you had to take it into modern times. Has that ever happened with you?
You know, I have to say, honestly, I think right now I'm in the first, I'm for the first time in the clutches of actually what you're talking about. Let me explain why. I'm very comfortable staying away from politics, but my sermonizing is prophetic bound. It comes from ethics and morality. That's what inspires my rabbinate. That's it. I'm at a place now where I have to walk very carefully because it really has nothing to do with Democrat or Republican. It has to do with finding policies that are taking place in our government, which in my Jewish educated mind are flashbacks to Germany in the 1930s. So when I am confronted with fascist policies, I feel every Jew, it is incumbent upon every Jew to speak up and stand up and say this can't be, because we, a handful of years ago, 6 million of our people were put in ovens for just because we were the scapegoated people. I don't think at the moment we are the scapegoated people. I think my black neighbors and our Hispanic neighbors are targeted, but we're right behind them because hate is insatiable. So for me, that is my challenge here, to try and I wrestle with it all the time, and it keeps me up nights all the time because I would like to walk at times into my congregation and say, as Jews, we cannot be silent on this. We have to look and see the ramifications of these behaviors. And though they may not be affecting us immediately, it doesn't matter to me. You know, if one child is crying, all children are crying. If one child is hungry, all children are hungry. So right now, I'm probably wrestling that. I will tell you one thing that my congregation, I think, knows about me. And I feel, for the most part, respected for it, although I probably make them a little nervous. I do have my bottom line. And there are things upon which I, if any human being is being denigrated or denied rights, I will go to the first page of the Torah, the very first page of the Bible. Every human being is created in God's image. I will fight for the right of every human being's right. I don't care what color, religion. I don't care about anything. I believe every human being is made in the image of God and is as worthy as the other. So that means worthy to love, to marriage, to all the things that all human beings take for granted. And I will fight for, and those kinds of causes, I cannot. It's not possible for me to keep my mouth quiet, even though at times it would probably be expedient and less threatening to my livelihood. So I do have a bottom line, but those are on issues.
Equality for all is something I think a lot of people in mainstream spiritual traditions can get their minds around. You lobbed some fireballs there, though. You used the word fascist policies. Are you drawing parallels between the current administration and fascism?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not coming out of I'm smart, but I'm not smart enough to draw those conclusions. But very, very wise, educated people, many scholars now. This is the dialogue and the circles that I'm in. And it's not rocket science. It's you compare different policy changes and laws that were changed in the 30s under Adolf Hitler's command that we see a lot of those kinds of things taking place now. And, we always say if you don't pay attention to history, it is bound to repeat itself. So as Jews who have had a history of finding ourselves in very dark places and being the fall guy for different political movements, we're very sensitive to it. And I'm called to the rabbinate, wants to do my part to uplift humanity to a higher place, but also be very careful to take care of Jewish people. They're my first child, right? And I think the times, they are a changing in a way that makes it a little bit more dangerous for all minorities, and that includes my people, the Jews.
And how are Jews being silent right now? What do you mean by that?
No, I'm not sure they're being silent. I think we're all trying to make sense of what's going on and what the ramifications. There's no need to run to judgment. We're all daily, I'm sure, wherever you stand politically as Jews, most all of us are, we've got our heads in the newspapers and we're trying to make sense of the rapid changes that are taking place in our government. And many of them, there are huge, huge flashing red lights. Be careful, be careful, be careful. The amendment we're talking about today is one of those. I see big flashing lights. Be careful. Do not mess with the separation of church and state, because once you mess with that, you open up a door to such dangerous possibilities. And I do think that we are seeing those things unfolding all around us.
Pastor Charlie Lee of First Presbyterian Church, do you see the same kind of danger, the same kind of warning signs? Is it time to bring politics into the pulpit?
Well, I think that it's always time to help people interpret their faith into their life, as I was saying. And so the thing that I would worry about with a Johnson Amendment repeal would be a is that I believe it would cut down on our amount of conversation, in that it would label our congregations in a way that that we would not be able to be maybe a diverse conversation, a diverse congregation. So instead of coming together around those essentials of our faith that connect us, that we can even disagree on how we live those out, but we are connected by those essentials. If we then have signs and banners that say, well, this is a church for this particular candidate or that particular candidate, my thought is that really just shuts down our engagement.
So you imagine then Republican and Democratic houses of worship. Is that what you're saying?
Could be, or just that pressure may be put on us to do those kinds of things. And, you know, I know in some of the literature I was reading, the fear of how, you know, money is donated to churches then being considered to be, you know, political donations somehow, that would make me also very nervous as a faith leader.
Would that put extra pressure on you? I mean, why? I know there's this sort of natural, and Rabbi Kozlow, I think you expressed it earlier when you were talking about disagreeing with one another and how that almost needs to happen as part of a healthy dialogue on any nuanced or complex issue. So there is a natural tendency, is that fair to say, among members of the clergy across faiths to not enter into the political arena? But if you play that all the way out, how can you separate politics from religion when you're talking about the principles and then how they express through public policy in daily life?
I think you cannot shy away from it, because you then can be very ineffective, and in a way you can neuter the gospel if you try to only say things that are the nice, polite thing to say, and you keep people you just want to make everyone happy. But then again, that's again the conversation of where you begin. So if you begin with the scripture and see what that says, and then how to apply that in our lives, that makes it much more different. So just this past Sunday, we were talking about the text on Jesus's Sermon on the Mount that talks about how we deal with anger. So he's reinterpreting or giving some additional interpretation on laws. He says, you've heard, do not murder or you'll be judged. But what I say is that if you hold anger towards another person, if you insult another person, then you'll also be judged. So kind of raising that level. This next week we're talking about the command to love our enemies. So those are some very simple and basic things, but they are right in our face in this divisive political arena, and how everybody's just trying to navigate, you know, everyday life. And so I don't think you shy away from those things. So this idea of, you know, so one way you could interpret those texts is say, well, just don't be angry, love everybody, and then move on. But the thing I think that is important to say is that there are things to be angry about. There are things that motivate us to a righteous anger and should then motivate us to action. So there are injustice, there is wrongdoing in this world that we do need to name and call out and then respond to. And so I think that's an important way to do it. But to couch that in what I think the text is telling us is to not do that, not let anger be our primary motivation. But a move to righteousness, which I think is a lot different. So this call to dehumanize and insult folks certainly goes both ways, as we're talking about our political conversations. If you're on your Facebook page, we're all susceptible to this confirmation bias, where you know our opinions are just confirmed, and that is made so much easier as we dehumanize and insult and caricature others. And so to begin from another place makes a big difference as people are trying to then act, whether that's politically or just in their everyday life.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking today about President Donald Trump's recent declaration that he would totally destroy the Johnson Amendment, which prohibits 501c3s from endorsing or opposing political candidates. Our guest today, Rabbi Julie Kozlow of B'nai Israel Synagogue, and Charlie Lee, associate pastor at First Presbyterian on 3rd in downtown Wilmington. And they're answering your questions on this Wednesday. Do you think religious leaders should be free to discuss political candidates, or should they stick to the more esoteric principles and let their congregants work out the specifics. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org or call us at 910-343-1138. The phone lines are open. We have an email from Tim who says, "Do you not see this as the first step to theocratic rule in America? We should look at how well theocracy has worked out for people in other places like Iran, Saudi Arabia, and under the Taliban. And if anyone dares suggest that that nightmare couldn't happen here because they are Muslim and we are Christian, I would counter that they are oblivious to history and to the peril of our democracy. I believe Jefferson's wall of separation between church and state serves us well and should be strengthened, if anything, and not weakened." Thank you.
I agree.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Tim, for that email. And we have Johnny from Jacksonville. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Good, thanks. Do you have a question or a comment?
I do. I do, actually. And I'm all for religious freedom. I understand there's a rabbi and a pastor on the show. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to be 100% honest with my assertion or my statement. If the church or the or any kind of religious organization would like to have a say in the state matters, then I suggest that they would prefer to, they would have to pay taxes, just like every other organization. I personally prefer a strong separation of church and state because faith is something personal and it does not apply to everybody. But if everybody is moving towards that direction, and if President Trump does want to take down the wall, you know, I mean the Johnson Act, then my suggestion will be that. And I honestly do not understand why that has not been enforced yet.
Why some of these religious organizations have not lost their tax-exempt status for endorsing or opposing political candidates.
Exactly, exactly. That it becomes a business at that point. It's not a religious organization at the moment. We can skirt around, you know, the laws and the bylaws, but it's not a nonprofit anymore. It becomes a business.
Johnny, thank you so much for that call. We were actually talking about this before the show started. Had anyone ever encountered a time when a church or a temple or a mosque or some other house of worship had been investigated by the IRS for having violated the Johnson Amendment? And I could only find one documented instance of that. It was a church in California, and it was a sort of complicated situation. And Pastor Lee, you haven't really heard of that around here.
Correct. In my reading, I did not see many instances. I know that the leeway, they give churches a lot of leeway in this area. And so, again, it's almost another reason of why I repeal something, because I agree that you don't really feel, or personally don't feel limited in what I'm able to say or to help my congregation think about because of this amendment, because it does give us, does give congregations a lot of leeway and really just stops us short of endorsing political candidates.
It does give you a lot of leeway. One former rabbi, Jordy Gerson, in an opinion piece published in Forward.com, says this would allow churches, synagogues, and mosques to serve as unregulated funnels for political money, money which could then be used to advocate for or endorse candidates of their choosing. That means that American tax dollars would subsidize political activity in synagogues, churches, and mosques. What's the problem there, Rabbi Koslow?
Well, of course, then it stops becoming a faith community, becomes a political community. So to me, it's pretty simple, and it's pretty dangerous. People are spiritually bereft in the times that we live. We all of us who are clergy members are working so hard, trying to be so creative to try and draw people back into a spiritual place, because we know that human behavior will be thoroughly dictated by somebody's spiritual sense. And to have things, you know, politics come into play, it takes over the environment. And that's not, I wouldn't even know how to, I don't like politics. I mean, ultimately, I believe that religion is politics. I mean, how you are going to live your life is your religion. But when you come together in faith communities, it's a very different reality, and we have to try and draw our focus to the character and to integrity and to decency and to all of the rights that every human being should have first and foremost. You know, in my congregation, I'm very clear where I am Rabbi Coslow and where I'm Julie. I knew my legal restraints not to mention any candidate during the election. I also took my few days off and was in Washington with 500,000 people marching the day after the inauguration. I know just as well as I know my rights that I cannot speak from my pulpit about who to vote for. I also know that my congregation or those who would want to stop me cannot say a word about my rights as an American citizen to go and march in Washington. So I think that those clear lines are vital. They make place for us as clergy to do our jobs as creatively as we can when we are working. And then we are also allowed as American citizens, you know, the right to go and make a stand where we stand. Do I come back and talk about that march in my congregation? No, I didn't. I think it would have been interesting, but, you know, I'm probably a little gun shy as well. We all are. You know, I don't want, of course, I'm sitting on the radio talking about it. I'm not ashamed of it, that I'm happy to talk about it. But from the pulpit, no, not yet. No, no, I'm not. Not.
Pastor, to me, it comes down to what our organizing principle is. And so if there is confusion on that, I think that's where there is a problem. And so if people's giving in our congregation should be motivated by their own response and gratitude to God's grace in their lives, and if it becomes much more an idea of what political candidate we endorse, mm-hmm. that shifts what our organizing principle is, and that would be problematic.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking today about that space where politics and religion meet with two local leaders in the faith community, Pastor Charlie Lee of First Presbyterian Church, Rabbi Julie Coslow of B'nai Israel Synagogue, both in Wilmington. When we come back from this 90-second break, you'll have one more second to get your question in on this Wednesday, 910-343-1138 or coastline at whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're learning about the potential implications of a Johnson Amendment repeal and how members of the clergy already navigate politics in the pulpit. Here to answer your questions on this Wednesday are Rabbi Julie Coslow of B'nai Israel Synagogue and Pastor Charlie Lee of First Presbyterian Church, both of Wilmington. Do you think members of the clergy should stay out of politics? Or are politics the expression of principle and morality? You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138, or you can reach us at coastline@whqr.org. Jim writes, during the Second Iraq War, the IRS tried to take religious institution tax law from the Reverend Ed Bacon and All Saints Episcopal Church in Pasadena, California, because he preached against the war. This administration needs to be careful of unintended consequences. And that is a different California church than the one I referenced before. So this former rabbi, Gerson, who published in Forward.com, her biggest fear, as she puts it in this piece about the repeal of the Johnson Amendment, is the loss of the law would strengthen those who want to impose the majority religion, Christianity, evangelical Christianity in particular, on everyone else. All our tax dollars would be indirectly subsidizing political donations made to right-wing churches in the service of advancing a theocratic vision of America, something that Tim wrote in about. Does that concern you, Rabbi Coslow?
Yes, it does concern me greatly. I think it would be just disastrous for all minorities, absolutely disastrous. And, you know, there's enough there's so much threat now to minorities as it is because for whatever reason we are in a political climate that is, that is very empowered in the strength of its sense of majority. And I think it would absolutely be tragic for all minorities if this were to.
But how does that play out? How do you get from having freedom to talk about political candidates when you sermonize, not having your tax-exempt status threatened by that? How do you get from there to this is going to start repressing minority religions?
Well, I just think the oppression is, it's not going to come directly. It's going to come from the power of money. And the power of money, as minorities, you're never going to have the same kind of money that you're working with as the majority churches. I mean, because just it's a numbers game. Minorities are minorities because they're less people. So the more money that is going to pour into once faith communities could be used as funnels for political money, there's just a million and one ways that can all go wrong. It just will. We can't even imagine the ways it's going to go wrong, but it would go wrong. And the people who would suffer for it would be those minorities who are struggling to have an equal voice in an environment that is going to become much less equal.
Is there a circumstance in which you can see a big donor coming to you in the synagogue or in the church and saying, I'm going to give you this large chunk of money in exchange for your support, your vocal support of this particular position on a social issue? Pastor Lee, has that ever happened?
It has not happened to me personally. I could see that happening, and that does happen in faith communities where people use giving as leverage, mm-hmm. to push an agenda one particular way or another. That's why the wonderful thing in our particular tradition in our faith community is that we believe that the Holy Spirit speaks much clearer in groups of people rather than in individuals. And so we have a board called a session. We have deacons. We have all these groups like that that we believe that prayerfully listen to and try to identify what God's calling on our congregation is. And so that helps keep that power from maybe one single not only a donor, but a pastor as well, to say there's one individual's viewpoint that's going to be put in place and apply to the entire organization. And so for my particular church, and I know there are other churches who don't operate that way, but that is one of the reasons I'm glad to be in my faith tradition, because I believe that is a faithful way that we can be a church together and faithfully listen to God's call on our community.
Rabbi Coslow, do you have a similar construct in the synagogue? If a big donor came to you and said, I'm willing to give you this large amount of money in exchange for your support while you sermonize on this particular issue, is there something of a firewall built in? Do you have support?
I cannot imagine that happening to me right now, but I can tell you if we continue into a climate that we're heading into and the Johnson Amendment goes away and faith institutions become fair game for the power of money, then it's faith institutions will be fair game for the power of money. And I will say without hesitation, money is the necessary evil. But it is something that can be the most productive gift given the human race, and it is also, without question, the most dangerous, destructive, and can be absolutely evil. What this would do is just opens up a whole new room for heaven knows what could what people who want power and have a lot of money can do with it. But I'm sure that would be attempted. It would not be any good to do to me, and it sounds like you're the same kind of pastor. I'm not a clergy person that somebody should feel comfortable thinking you could come and force me to say something that I don't want to say. That's just not going to happen. But can I see it becoming an issue for us all to contend with? Absolutely.
Reverend Jim writes, what about that some of the greatest voices for social justice, Martin Luther King Jr., the Berrigan brothers, or go back to the prophets or Jesus, they were all outspoken about social issues of their time.
I think that's important, and that's something that I wrestle with all the time as a pastor is the prophetic voice. And what are those? Where are those times? What are those issues that you do need to speak out and name things individually? The thing that I wrestle with in my congregation, as I said, we've got people who fall on different sides of the political spectrum, who believe different things. So when I do think about the prophetic voice and what I am going to say, one of the things that I wrestle with is how can I say those things in a way that everyone there can still hear them, because I do believe there is and people are called to different ministries. So I would say there are some folks that are called to be that prophetic voice, that voice crying out in the wilderness so that people can hear them. Others of us have different gifts. And so as in my congregation on a weekly basis, as I'm engaging with the text and listening for the Holy Spirit, is trying to say, how can I be truthful to the interpretation of this text? How can I deliver this message that I feel God has for this congregation? To do so honestly and straightforward and not shy away from it, but also frame it in a way that people from all sides are still going to be able to hear it and apply it. And that doesn't always happen. There are times when some people will hear it, you know, through a different lens than I intended it, and they may either not be happy with it or not. And the only thing I can do is engage with those people and hopefully it sparks the conversation rather than ends the conversation.
Maury writes, I fear repeal is the first step in removing not-for-profit status from religious institutions. Pastor Lee, earlier in the program, you spoke about same-sex marriage as being one of the social issues that had confronted your congregation, and it was something that had been a divisive issue in your congregation, and you said that you groups of people get together and talk about this and pray about it, and that there's a lot of consideration from a lot of people given to it. Where have you arrived? What is the current policy in your congregation? Is this a moving target? Is it evolving? Is it where it needs to be right now?
I think it is evolving just as it evolves in the culture. Our beliefs on all these different social issues are affected by what's happening in the culture. And so in our congregation, we wrestled with this, the same gender marriage and previously with ordination as well. And our congregation came up with a policy to bless unions, but not to have marriages in our congregation. Pastors are able to act on their own. If they would like to perform a marriage, they can do that. And it was very, as I said, divisive and hurtful on all sides. And there were some who left our congregation because of that, both in favor and both opposed, who did not feel like we came up with the right decision. But there are also groups who have stayed engaged with our congregation to say, we want to, in the midst of this painful issue, we want to also make sure people feel welcome here, that this is a safe space, that you can come and engage in these discussions and engage in your own faith development. And so they have extended this kind of radical welcome to folks to say, this is a place that you can come. And so it is difficult, and the thing that I think that we wrestle with is these are hard issues that sometimes you just want them to go away. It would just be easier. You know, let's not talk about these things. Let's talk about the things that we all agree on. But as we know, they continue to be alive in our culture and in our lives. As I said, when it goes away from being some issue on CNN to a neighbor that you know or a friend that you have, and those things, it makes it much more personal, which I think is important. So while sometimes you wish those issues might go away, I think it is important to keep that discussion alive, even with people who vehemently disagree with each other. And sometimes you see that the relationships that develop in those, they may never agree, but they can at least understand each other as children of God and discuss those in a respectful manner. And we'll continue. I would imagine our own policies will continue to change and evolve just as the years go on. But I think that's something we need to stay engaged with.
Rabbi Julie Koslow, how do you keep this healthy discussion going? How do you keep people engaged without losing them from the congregation if the discussion gets too honest or the topic feels too divisive? How do you keep people in the room?
You know, I have to say, honestly, every sermon I've ever written, and I write a sermon every week, and it takes me hours, and I feel it's a powerful spiritual experience that I have listening for the words that I'm meant to speak to my congregation. There isn't a sermon I've ever written in all my years of being a rabbi which is not fundamentally inspired by social justice, not a one. And yes, I will always start in the text somewhere, but my tradition allows me to go where my mind and heart and soul will go. And I am a rabbi in the prophetic mode. There's prophetic mode and priestly mode, and I'm definitely in the prophetic mode. I have to say, honestly, I don't think our congregation has really I'm not sure who's who. I'm not sure who voted where. I have some ideas. We're not really out. We're not out. We're not out of the closet with it. I did receive a message from a woman a few weeks ago who's a congregant who said, why aren't we having discussions about the ramifications of all the political things that are happening on Jewish people throughout the world? And I wrote back and I said, I would absolutely love for you to come and inspire that dialogue, and I would love to be there. But I feel, honestly, that for me to call that is a little bit too, you know, it needs to be a congregant who wants to say, let's be in dialogue and in polite dialogue about our differences here. I would welcome that. I would love that. I would have to be very careful as to my place in it. But, you know, I mean, I think we honestly really have not. The most I can tell you is that we have a Sabbath. We'll come. We'll sit. Everyone comes into the sanctuary. And I've just said, I know people are suffering. The politics is causing such great anxiety for so many people, me included, that I do understand that sometimes when we walk into that sanctuary to sort of stop and connect spiritually, the last thing we want to be thinking about, we're actually trying to disconnect from some of the high anxiety that's existing in our culture today around the political issues. So,
do you think people are tired of the political discussion and they look for that sort of inner peace can find in a sanctuary?
Like, I'm not going to say tired now, because I think people are really invigorated on all sides. I'm not seeing tiredness at all. I'm seeing that, and this is the beauty because it allows me to teach, that they're not tired and so they end up in the sanctuary. They have done their work. They're doing their work in whatever their belief system is, but they need a place that transcends that, you know, a place where life is meaningful outside of what is ever happening down here in these hot political situations. Our spiritual life can transcend those boundaries, and without that, people are left spiritually bereft. So I think both are important. Everybody should be standing up and fighting for what they believe right now. This is not an innocuous time. This is a time to take a stand, whatever you believe. But then, God willing, everybody has a safe spiritual place to go and to feel the presence of God soothing us in our anxiety and rejuvenating us to go back out there and do the work. But as a community, I'm well aware I will always be sermonizing on issues of social justice. That's the rabbi. But I'll also create a safe space for people.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Rabbi Koslow, Pastor Lee, thank you both so much for joining us today. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Caleb Covington engineered today's show. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast on iTunes. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. Join us each week for Coastline Live, Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.